Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. Our guest today is Marianne Bacall-Uba. Marianne is a transformation coach, a holistic health and wellness expert, and a certified pranayama and meditation teacher. She empowers women to transform trauma into triumphs, heal themselves from within, and create a thriving life in mind, body, and soul with clarity and confidence. Years ago, although Marianne had a great marketing career, she still felt unfulfilled, unhappy, anxious, and dealt with her PTSD and depression through alcohol and substance abuse. It wasn't until an overdose and out-of-body near-death experience that she finally woke up. She was given a second chance at life and began her spiritual journey. Now she's writing her forthcoming book, Survivor to Thriver, that talks about her journey of overcoming childhood sexual abuse, substance alcohol abuse, and traditional cultural norms to living a thriving life of health and wellness for the mind, body, and spirit. She hopes that by sharing her story and journey, others can also find healing, transformation, and empowerment. Marianne believes in empowering the next generation to step up, embrace their uniqueness, and speak their truth. We live in the most remarkable time in history, and women are remembering their innate powers and stepping up. In order to raise powerful girls, we have to set an example by being powerful and conscious women. Well, welcome, Marianne. I'm so glad to have you here today. And I love that you have a really powerful topic that we're kind of going to dive into a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about your experience of being a powerful woman of color and your culture and kind of how it's played a role in your life experience. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to start out by just telling our listeners a little bit about you and the work that you're doing today and your amazing journey.
Absolutely. First, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on this podcast, on your podcast, to share my message and my story. I think what you're doing is absolutely beautiful, and to bring in more diversity to all the media and everything. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm a transformation coach, a speaker, an author, a podcaster, just like you. I think overall, my whole mission is to really empower women, especially women who've gone through trauma and different types of, we all go through different traumas in our lives, to really help overcome that through finding healing from within. So empowering them by giving them the tools and guiding them to heal from within and heal holistically. So mind, body, and soul. So they can pursue whatever they want with their life, with clarity and with confidence.
So I love that. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your background and your culture.
So I'm Filipino-American, and I was born in the Philippines and moved to L.A. when I was 4. And I grew up my entire life in L.A., Southern California. And I had the pretty much what a quintessential growing up, basically, in Southern California. My mom was a nurse. There's a lot of Filipino nurses. My dad was an engineer. I went, you know, we lived in the suburbs. I went to Catholic private school my whole life. So it was a very traditional Catholic upbringing. And on the outside, I looked like I had everything together, you know, great house, middle-class family. I did really well in school. I went to college. I basically checked off all the boxes that I needed to, or I thought was required of me, you know, and we're taught in our culture and as well as just society in general that, okay, you go to school, you do good grades, you go to college, you get a really good job, you get married. It's like this thing that you, this checklist, right? And on the outside, in my 20s to late 20s, I actually had a really amazing marketing career. At one point, I was the marketing director for actually the top with the biggest Filipino American company that was a retail and grocery chain. I traveled, I was a food blogger and writer, so I had a lot of like TV and YouTube stuff. So on the outside, people thought I had just everything together. Mm-hmm. But behind closed doors, I actually lived a double life. I was severely depressed. I was really anxious and I suffered from PTSD because I hadn't dealt with trauma from my childhood. I had childhood trauma from being sexually abused for years. And I was told to just keep quiet. Don't talk about it. That never happened. You know, don't do anything to shame the family. Mm-hmm. So, and it's like, you know, life is going so well for you. Why are you bringing up the past? Don't do all that. Like, you have to be grateful. So I always thought, okay, I do have a good job. I make good money. Just like push this all down. So I drank a lot. I had drug abuse. I was suicidal. But when I had to be out in public, I switched it off. And I'm like, I'm good. I'm good. Things are good. And when I was 28, that all unraveled for me. I overdosed. And I had an out-of-body near-death experience that just completely woke me up. I saw myself. I saw myself die, that death. I saw them put me in a body bag. I saw my funeral. And I was really given a choice by whatever other people call it, universe, God, the source, to either stay or come back. And I didn't know what I would be doing yet because I wasn't in this transformation work before, but I knew that I still had a purpose to fulfill, so I came back. And then right after that experience, I knew I had to change something in my life because things were too comfortable in Southern California. I had all the things that kept me in place, and I knew I had to do something different in order to change my life, or else I felt I would go back into that cycle. So I bought a one-way ticket and I moved to Miami. And this was 4 years ago. And in moving here, I was able to really delve into myself. I felt my whole life I had looked for external sources mm-hmm. to heal and fulfill me, whether it be work, relationships, you know, drinking, whatever it was. But here I learned to go within. So I started meditating, practicing mindfulness, seeking out other types of healing, not just prescription drugs or medicine, but working with shamans, energy healers, and just really taking time for myself, finding out like, what do I need to heal so that what is on the outside fits with what's going on in the inside. I felt like my double life was just caught up with me. And so through that transformation and being able to really heal what happened, I was able to come out publicly with my story. Now an advocate to help other women come out, especially Asian American women who are taught to stay quiet and not talk about any of these things because you don't want to shame the family. I'm writing a book, the podcast, and I've really delved into helping other women deal with that in a very healthy, holistic way so that every part of their life, once you heal from within, the rest of your life falls into place magically and created a business, you know, so you could take what works with you and what's helping others into this amazing business and kind of put it together. So now how I feel on the inside reflects on the outside, and it's a beautiful thing. And I can help others get to this place as well.
That's really amazing. And it's such an inspiration that you have taken your journey of something that essentially almost did kill you. Mm-hmm. And you've taken it to helping others from your own experience. I want to talk a little bit more about the impact of your culture and, you know, not just being brought up Filipino, but also we have the similarity. I also went to Catholic school my entire life, and there's this underlying theme or mentality about keeping things very quiet mm-hmm. and not talking about when you're struggling with something or when you're having a hard time with something. And especially for girls, I feel like there was this huge pressure to look a certain way and act a certain way. You know, the concept, act like a lady or sit yeah. like a lady.
Be a good girl.
Be a good girl.
Quiet, yeah. like this whole, I, yeah. Totally.
And it really instilled, it starts to instill the concept of perfectionism, which is already a huge problem for girls these days because of the impact that society is putting on them to look a certain way. But then when you have the pressure as well from your school that has, you know, such as,
you have to conform. I'm sure you probably had a uniform as well, which takes away, again, the personal identity. And then coming from a culture, yours from the Filipino and mine from the Latina culture, that also has this own set of ideas and guidelines of what you're supposed to look like, that must have been a huge sense of pressure for you. How has it been with your family since you pretty much have separated from your culture and pushed away to be able to heal yourself?
And I did. I had to move away in order to do that. And since I came out with the story, I've had some of my family still who did not agree with me coming out and basically feeling like they threw my family under the bus and that I shamed them now. You know, that was such a long time ago. Why are you bringing it up and ruining the family? But I felt it's something I had to do for me. And it was beyond me. It was to help other women and girls who've gone through something similar to realize that they're not alone and that you can thrive after this. You know, my book is called Survivor to Thriver, that a lot of women, especially who go through any sexual trauma, feel that they're alone.
Right.
And they keep it in, and it manifests in their lives in so many different ways. But there is a safe space. And I did have some family members who completely supported me, and I found friends that support me. And I want to tell people, because there's a deep sense of family guilt, right, that you feel for not, you know, that you are not what they want you to be. Mm-hmm. My whole life, I felt that I had to do things to please my family. And I realized, like, that nearly killed me. And I had to do things that I knew in my heart, in my soul, my mind were right for me.
Right.
And so there are some relationships that have been estranged, but I see it as we've just grown differently, and I can still love you and forgive you from afar, but I don't necessarily have to have a day-to-day relationship with you if I feel that that relationship is toxic.
Yeah. You know? And that's a huge jump for you to make. And a lot of what we teach in our community is, you know, when we talk about raising girls, a lot of how we parent these days, or how we choose to live our life these days, comes from behavior that's been modeled to us. And so unless we decide to choose and do something differently, so you could have decided to continue the pattern of behavior from your family and your culture, to keep things quiet, to internalize things, and to do things to continue to please them, because that is what was being dictated by your culture and by your family.
Yeah.
But you had this insight within you to say, this is not right for me. Mm-hmm. You know, you had your experience that was kind of your aha, your eye opening to say, I need to choose differently based on what's best for me and not what's dictated by my family, by our, you know, the way that our culture does things.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of strength.
And, you know, I didn't do it alone. I truly believe that we are all connected. And because I reached out and had other people in my life who became family, my friends are my family, who completely supported me through this healing process of coming out and speaking publicly about it. Because that was a very scary thing. I'd held a secret for over 21 years, and to even talk about it was just, like, it made my body shake. Mm-hmm. You know, I lost sleep over it, but I knew there was something that I had to do. It was a calling to share, because I know that, and you know, when I told the story, when I talked about it in my podcast, I've had, can't even tell you how many messages and emails from people that I don't even know who said, your story is just like mine. You know, but I don't, you know, I haven't told anyone because same thing with the family. There's so many people. It's actually so common that it's sad, but not really talked about. So I felt that I did the right thing talking about it publicly, because it strengthened other people. And hearing other people before I spoke about it strengthened me, you know. So we're here to really help each other out. And there's always resources and people that we can turn to. We're not alone. I think that's the main thing, is that we're not alone. And there's avenues of healing and places where people can listen, like just like your podcast and mine and other places where people need to know that there is help and there's life after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that there's so many challenges that families face these days, whether it's a trauma like yours, or, you know, we have children that have disabilities these days, that there's so much shame that's attached to anything that we don't deemed to be within the scope of normal, which is not even, it's, you know, which is dictated by society. Mm-hmm. But how powerful it is to come from a place of speaking your truth, because you not only empower yourself, but so many people around you. You know, for me, motherhood, I had this idea in my head of what motherhood was going to look like, you know, down to the moment of when my daughter was born. I was literally expecting like the heavens to part and angels to sing and it to be magical and me to have this like amazing bond with my child. And after 54 hours of a horrendous labor, she came out and I was like, I was exhausted. That moment didn't happen. And I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. Until I opened my mouth, I think 2 or 3 months later. And I was like, this is hard.
Yeah.
This is not what I thought motherhood was going to be like. There's mm-hmm. a lot of days that suck. Mm-hmm. And when I said that, and I felt so much shame for having said that, but the moment the words came out of my mouth in front of other mothers and they felt comfortable now that the Band-Aid had been ripped off, that they too were able to say, yeah, I have a hard time, or this is difficult. And that's how you become powerful, because then we start talking about, well, what can we do to support each other mm-hmm. on
you
this
created journey. That space, you know, that space for other women to also open up. And I think that's beautiful, because a lot of times, like you said, you thought you were alone. There's other mothers probably thought they were like, oh, it's just me, I'm the horrible one. And when you created that space, you're like, oh my gosh, we're human. You know, things get hard. Things are not roses and sunshine, you know, and it's these moments where we are vulnerable and we are authentic and we share that with others. We actually gain strength from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for listeners out there that, you know, come from a strong cultural background, whatever culture it is, and they recognize that there are certain aspects of things they do every day or things that they think of, and it's directly related to their culture, and it may not necessarily agree with, you know, their soul. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good, but they continue to do it to not disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
How can you get them to start? What are some things to do to start moving towards making more conscious choices on what feels good and dealing with the repercussions of mm-hmm. making those different choices?
I think we live in a beautiful time where we have so much information out there on the internet, and you can actually read about things that call to your soul. That things that call to you. So for example, meditation, that has been a huge life changer for me. And meditation is actually something that anyone could do anytime, any place. This concept of meditation and mindfulness, it's actually so necessary, yet we live in a place and a world where it's like, go, 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 fast, fast, fast. And we don't let ourselves just kind of go inward. And I think if there's something in your culture that holds you back, one, you could learn something new through the internet. You can research things that, you know, call to you so you don't feel so alone. There's so many different resources. There's groups, there's people that you meet online who are more in line with what your beliefs are. That's what happened with me. You know, I wasn't taught a lot of these things. So I went online, I searched, I read books, I listened to podcasts, and things that started resonating with me. I'm like, that feels right. You know, this, I wasn't taught this, but this feels right. I just started delving into it. And there's so much free information out there. Mm-hmm. I think we all have this internal spiritual GPS that like lets us know that it feels right, you know, and just kind of use that to guide you. And that's what guided me to meditation. And I feel meditation is this concept of, so praying is asking for things, whereas meditation, I feel, is just listening. And it's going to a space where you just still yourself enough to hear that inner voice, you know. And it's not, I don't think it's complicated. And I feel that, because I used to come from a place where I thought meditation wasn't for me. You know, when I was in corporate, I had heard meditation was, I had all these benefits, and I was very anxious, high strung, overachiever. And I was like, okay, I'm going to sit down 10 minutes. I'm going to do this. And I came at it very like aggressively. Mm-hmm. I sat down and my mind went crazier. And I was like, this isn't for me. This type of hippie stuff doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. And when I came to Miami and I started like hearing again about all these people who've healed and meditation keep coming up. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll give this another chance. And what I realized was that there is no one way, right? Mm-hmm. So if meditation in one way doesn't work for you, there's so much, there's transcendental meditation, there's mantra meditation, music guided, you know, don't cross it off because the one thing that you tried didn't work. And same thing with guided meditation and all these apps, there's different voices of teachers that will resonate with you. And there's some that won't. Like, just give it a shot to try it out. And for me, I literally crawled before I could stand up and walk, you know, instead of feeling this ego, like I could do it for 10 minutes. I could do anything. I started with 1 minute, 1 minute, turned to two, turned to three. And I just built that step. I think we live in a world where we want instant gratification. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, I can do this. But think about it. You spent all these years, right, with this type of programming, and you expect to try it once and it'll cure. There's no cure-all. Mm-hmm. And it's a daily practice. I meditate every day still. And there's times where meditation is great. There's times where it's not. But I just keep doing it. And those incremental steps will just have changed my life. And so for anyone who's even remotely interested or have heard of meditation, try it for 1 minute. There's apps out there that has guided meditation for 1 minute. It's just really sitting with yourself. You can have it with music, with silence. It can be going out in nature and just looking at the trees and the flowers for 5 minutes, one, whatever it is, and just do that every day. Just one thing every day, and it'll build.
Yeah. And it's just, it's taking that time for yourself. It's a part of self-care, of, mm-hmm. of slowing down enough to just be present. And it's such a wonderful technique and tool to use with mm-hmm. children. Both of my girls, we're very lucky that their school is very into mindfulness and meditation. And so my youngest at three, you know, their morning circle starts with a minute of meditation and then yoga, stretching.
That's amazing.
You know, and my oldest, I was in their school last week doing some work, and they had just finished lunch and they sat circle and they went through, you know, some music that they sang, and then they sat for 5 minutes of meditation. And I had actually thought they had left the room because I was in a different room, and I walked in and they were 30 children, first through third grade, sitting with their eyes closed, meditating.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, the sense of peace is amazing, but they've learned when they are stressed out, or, you know, need to be realigned, that doing something like that can help, or me mm-hmm. suggesting, why don't you sit in your room for 5 minutes and meditate? And maybe you'll come up with the answer, or maybe you'll be able to relax enough to be able to explain to me why you're freaking out right now.
Yeah.
But it's a great tool that parents can use together, you know, with mm-hmm. their children, and do a mindful meditation, you know, 3 to 5 minutes every day. Maybe that's something that you guys do and you come together in the morning or in the evening to sit and meditate, or, mm-hmm. You know, be quiet together and have space together.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what can come out, especially of children, when they sit and they learn to slow down, right? Because their brains are going even faster
than
our brains are going
these
days.
Yeah, and it really is that simple, just a few minutes. It doesn't have to be a whole ceremony. It doesn't have to, it's a few minutes. And it's, the benefits are just exponentially amazing. Like, I became a certified pranayama and meditation teacher because I believed in it so much, you know? And it gives you that awareness to breathe, because we forget to breathe. Just breathe properly. We forget because our mind's just everywhere and we're always rushing to, like, breathe and take a step back and be like, okay, why is this happening? What do I need to do? What can I change differently? And approach it from a more, like, aware, conscious standpoint instead of very reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you went through that near-death experience and you decided that you needed change, you still had a lot of stuff that was going on. You know, mm-hmm. addiction is not something that you can just turn a light switch off overnight and it goes mm-hmm. away. What helped you get through that, you know, and to be able to learn some healthier habits?
One was I did move. I felt like I had to remove myself from that circle of friends, that cycle, all that, because I needed that change. So I moved here. And it's true, it was hard. Like, old habits die hard. And when I came here and I was by myself and I had no plan, I went back to coping with drinking and all that stuff until I was like, things need to change. So I started meditation. I started educating myself, reading. I went to teachers. I actually got mentors and coaches to be, that's how I became a coach myself, because I sought out other people who had gone something similar, but were a few steps ahead of me in their healing. Like, what can I learn from you? And that's what helped me in this path. And it's really putting myself first. And that whole concept of self-care and self-love, my whole life I had thought self-love was unnecessary, and I was always giving and giving and not fulfilling myself. And I realized that that's why I just felt so depleted, and I had to fill this void with other things.
Right.
And the moment that I started filling it with myself and this concept of self-love and self-care, I actually have more to give to others. So that whole concept of, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup really resonates with me, because, you know, the more centered you are and the more you have, you actually, love is abundant. You know, you are able to give more, and you can bring your best self to others.
Yeah. And do you think that that concept of giving and giving and giving to others stemmed from how you were raised and the behavior that was modeled by your family and the women in your family?
Definitely. You know, it's this concept of martyrdom is actually highly regarded. Like, you need to sacrifice yourself in your life, or else you're being selfish. And, you know, it was, I felt like what was taught was the family first over the individual. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was, like, that will just cave in. You have to have your foundation set. So yourself has to be strong, and then you could build it up, you know, instead of the other way around. And that's all stuff I had to relearn, you know, because I wasn't taught that. I was taught that thinking that way was selfish, and, you know, that's not, it wasn't a very religious thing, you know. So I just started doing this, like, and it's the daily practices and surrounding myself with other people who are more aligned with the way I wanted to live.
And so what's the reaction now from your family that now that they see how, you know, your transformation has been amazing, you're in a much better place and you're healthy and you're thriving, mm-hmm. But it's coming from a place of you putting yourself first.
Yeah.
You think it's been an eye opener for some in your family that maybe they're thinking about trying to go down that route as well of taking care of themselves? Have you started to open the door for others in your community because of this?
Yes, absolutely. I've actually been interviewed in Filipino news and other Asian American like outlets to talk about my story and transformation, and they're hungry for it because it's not something really taught, but they know that once they do, you know, put themselves first and do things like meditation, it has so many benefits. And I've gotten responses from people like who are asking, how do you do that? How do you get into that? I have family members who have seen my transformation. And now, instead of me going to them, like, this is what I did, they just ask me, like, so what did you do? Like, what are you doing? Even being, I became plant-based. And I have a really close, my aunt, who's like a mother to me, she was like, she's eating healthier. She's lost 10 pounds because she like gave up like red meat and just eating healthier and putting like her body and like working out and like just health first. You know, she's walking and she's like, I feel great. I'm like, yes, when you put yourself first in, you know, healthy mind, body, and spirit, you feel great. And you just want to continue that path. So yes, it has. I think just me living my life like in alignment with my truth has, and people have seen it because they saw how I was before. Mm-hmm. Almost daily I have people be like, what, like asking me what I did and what I'm doing. I think that's why I came with the podcast. And in my book, I go into steps. I talk about this. It's the tiny little steps. You know, for me, it's crazy to think that 4 years have already passed when 4 years ago, I was completely lost and didn't know what to do and just so like desolate, you know, and it's just such a huge change for me now.
Yeah. And it's amazing how, you know, it wasn't this massive, massive thing that you had to do to start cultivating change in so many other people's. It was speaking your truth. It was finding stuff that felt good to you as a person, as opposed to doing what others were telling you should feel good or should be good. Mm-hmm. And you know, that can vary from woman to woman. And I think what's so important is that we teach girls to follow that inner intuition and, you know, to do things that feel right to you because they feel right to you, not because I say you should do it or someone else says you should do it. And the impact that it can have when you follow your own truth.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, I love your story. It's been amazing. If there's anything that you could tell, you know, parents that are raising girls and they want to start breaking some of these patterns of behavior, you know, passed on through their culture, and through generations, what would it be?
I think it's that the change always starts within you. So I think if parents who are thinking about meditation or living more consciously and they start doing that, their kids will see their own transformation in them and start, you know, that type of light and healing will go out toward family and they'll start thinking like, okay, what is mom or dad doing? You know, and they seem happier and lighter, and that, you know, that effect of you know, with that self-love and self-care will pour out into your children. So like including them into that, maybe they'll get into meditation instead of the forceful way, like, hey, meditation's good. Go to meditation, go to yoga. They'll start seeing the change within yourself and they'll be like, oh, okay. You know, because kids never want to be told what to do.
Exactly.
But if they see that there's some benefits, they'll start getting curious and they'll be like, oh, okay. Okay, let me start doing that too, instead of telling them that they have to. I think that's why it all just starts within you, and then things will naturally happen. Once you start healing yourself from the inside out, things will start naturally happen, and the people will get attracted to that energy.
Yeah, it's modeling that powerful behavior that we want to see in them, but it definitely starts with the parents first. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time. Your story is amazing. Continue on your journey. Of doing amazing work and caring for yourself. I think it's really, really powerful and inspiring.
Thank you so much.
For more information on Marianne, you can visit her at www.mariannebacaluba.com. That's MarianneBacaluba.com. To continue our enlightening conversations, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.